Hi, this is Chaz Palminteri. Welcome to the Chaz Palminteri podcast. I'm going to do the intro when he's not around so he doesn't get embarrassed. But this is one guy, he's like the actor's actor. All actors love him. He's absolutely a great actor, a writer, a director. He does it all. Vincent D'Onofrio. Vincent, so nice to have you on the show.
It's so nice to be here and to see you, my friend. Yeah.
It's really great to see you. For those of you who have not seen Godfather of Harlem, Vincent plays Vincent Chin Gigante, and I play Joe Bonanno, and we're having a ball on it. And
we play versions of them.
We play versions of them. That is correct. Now, I have to start off with some things, Vincent.
Yes, sir.
You grew up in Bensonhurst, is that right?
Well, I grew up partly in Bensonhurst. I was born in Bensonhurst and spent a lot of time there when I was young. And then every summer there with my grandfather, because my parents got divorced and we moved down to Florida.
Right.
But I went back every summer and used to, hang in my grandfather's house and live there. And, and eventually started working in his shop. He used to be in a drapery and upholsterer.
Right. And you grew up a little bit in Owyhee too, in Colorado?
I did, yeah. Yeah. My mom was raised in Hawaii. Her family, that side of the family, came to Brooklyn first from Napoli and then went to Hawaii. And my grandfather Rocco, or Freddie, but everybody called him Rocco, opened the first fried chicken Italian restaurant in Honolulu.
In Honolulu? Wow.
Yeah.
What it must be like to be a kid in Honolulu? That must be like paradise or something, right? I mean,
well, she had a great she enjoyed her childhood. But I went to third and fourth grade. All I remember about it really was that we could wear shorts and no shirts and no shoes to school if we wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Damn, that's pretty great, man! Wow, and I mean, you literally grew up in you were influenced in the theater. Your dad grew up in the theater, didn't he?
Yeah, that was his thing. You know, he was an interior designer by trade, but he did, he had a community theater wherever.
Do you think you were influenced by that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the first time I was on stage was with him. It was with him doing little bit parts, and then. Back then, you remember when they used to do like those melodramas all the time, like Dirty Work at the Crossroads and stuff like that? Do you remember those old plays?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he would do like a week of those in his community theater once in a while, and I would open the night with a magic act.
Wow. Yeah. I'm trying to get, because a lot of actors, musicians, writers, directors watch the show, listen to my show and watch it. And they always like to know how people got started, because obviously they want to, they say, gee, he's like I was, people think for some reason, stars just become stars. No, I was reading about you that you actually was a bodyguard at the Hard Rock Cafe.
I was, yeah, and several other places too.
Right, and I was at the Limelight in New York.
Oh, that's
and I was a bodyguard.
Totally
so
forgot about that. I worked the Limelight a couple of nights, and the night that John Lennon got killed, I was working at the Limelight.
Wow, really?
Yeah. And we shut down, and we all walked across the park.
Wow, that is incredible. We just had Billy Joel on,
Can't believe it. That's crazy.
And Billy was telling us, and I'm only saying it because it's such a quick story. He said, did you know the Beatles? And he said, yeah, I except for John Lennon. And it's so strange because he said he knew Paul and George and Ringo, but he never really knew John. And John lived right near him. And John Lennon would rowboat past his house and he would say to his guy, he says, no, I don't want to bother Billy. He needs his privacy. And Billy would go by his house with his boat, and he would say, I don't really want to bother John. He needs his privacy. And then, obviously, John was assassinated, and Billy always regrets that he never knocked on his door and said hello.
We're always like that with our peers, right? I mean, it's a story that's easy to believe because, you know, right? I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way about people that you admired and just, you're like, yeah, you know, I really don't want to bother them. You know?
Well, because we understand about that. You know, you just don't want to, what am I going to knock on his door, say, hi, I'm Billy Joel, I'm John Leonard, you know? Yeah. And he told me that and it was like, wow, like you said, Vincent, sometimes, you know, sometimes you got to step out there and do something, you know? And I know you worked and studied. Did you at the Actors Studio in New York too?
No, first I was at I studied with Sonia Moore. I don't know if you remember her, but she wrote all the books on Stanislavski.
Yes,
were around back when we were younger, and she had the American Stanislavski Theater Company, and I studied with her, and then ended up touring with her for a little bit, and then I met Sharon Chatton, who was a member of the Actors Studio.
Right.
And Sharon became my mentor. And so I learned method acting through Sharon. It wasn't until much later where I became a lifetime member.
Now, what would you think? What would you say? Because everybody always wants it. They always ask me this question. Don't forget, when you get Vincent, ask him. What would you say was your first break in show business?
My first break?
Well, I mean, we know the big break.
Yeah. No, it was definitely...
Broadway.
You know, it's weird because there's like personal stuff that happens, right? Like meeting Sharon and studying for the first time a technique beyond just the original Stanislavski. That was, in a way, a kind of break for me. I mean, it didn't get me jobs, but it did elevate me to a point where I got it. Like, oh, I get it now. Like, I know how to get jobs. Like, I knew how to get jobs with her. She taught me how to get jobs. You know, she taught me to be a real actor, not just somebody who studies, you know. But I guess Broadway, I did a play called Open Admissions with Calvin Levels was the lead.
Right.
It was all these great actors in it. It only ran for a few months and then it closed, but that was my first break. And then I started to slowly, get other little theater things but not back on Broadway again. In fact, I've never been back on Broadway again. But then I got, shortly after that, I ended up in Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Full Metal Jacket for a moment. Originally I heard he wrote the part for a small skinny guy.
Yeah.
Then he, is that true, Vincent?
Yeah. It's from a book called Short Timers. Gustav Hoffer wrote it. Yeah.
And then he thought it would be more powerful with someone as tall as you. And
he thought the character needed to be eventually more threatening, I think, you know?
Right. And you hold the Guinness Book of Records, as they say, as the actor who gained the most weight for any part was 80 pounds.
Do I really?
That's what it says. I was reading about you.
Nobody's done more.
I've been able to gain 60 of Raging Bull, and you gained 80. My God, 80 pounds.
Way much weight.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah, it took me.
How did you get that role? What was the moment you got it? They just called you and said you got it?
No, I went on tape for it. Matthew was already had the part.
Right.
And he told me that there was a part left and I should audition for it. And I only had a theater agent and I didn't have a film agent or anything.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I did. Me and my buddy Steve Marshall, who's still my buddy for all these years. We were 24. We got one of those video cameras, which were like the size of a Volkswagen. You know, they were like, you remember those back then? And they had the deck, like a big deck.
Yes.
You had, yeah. So we rented one. I rented one for scounged up my bouncer money, right? And I did a monologue that I was doing in a play at the time. Sat on a stoop on 10th Avenue, on 21st Street and 10th Avenue, near there. Some stoop, we just sat there. And I did the monologue and I sent it to him. And basically, he called me in like 3 weeks after that. He called me.
And said, you got the part.
No, he said, first I hung up on him because I used to work with, you know, being a bouncer, you worked with cops and firefighters, right, everybody right. moonlighting, right? And, you know, I was an actor to them, you know, and so they would give me a hard time all the time, you know. So I just thought it was one of them giving me a hard time. So I just kind of hung up the phone. And it was Leon Vitali, his renowned sideman. And he called me back. He said, "Don't hang up, you know. This is Stanley Kubrick wants to talk to you." And then Stanley was very brief. He said, "I sent you some pages. I want you to just read the pages, put them on video again, and send them back. Send the video back." And when I got the pages, and that was it. That's all he said to me. And then I got the pages, and I, you know, of course, I was like totally like freaked out, you know, because
right.
you know, wow,
Stanley you know, Kubrick.
We grew up watching Kubrick movies.
Exactly.
Know? So. Yeah, so, and that's exactly what he sent me. He sent me about three pages with no punctuation, just words. And I still didn't really understand the character, but I just kind of figured something out. And I was staying, I had an apartment in Jersey City, and in the backyard there was a picket fence, and I stood in front of the picket fence, and my friend Steve, we shot it again, and then I sent it out there. And then he called me a couple weeks later. And, you know, he gave me the part. He said, "I want you to come out." And he said, "I think you're going to have to put on a bunch of weight, you know." I said, "Okay." And, you know, by the way, De Niro had just done Raging Bull, which is the only reason why I understood what he meant, you know, or made any sense whatsoever. You know what I mean? Because if De Niro can do it, you know, I'm going to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because of how amazing he is, it's like I wanted to emulate that in some possible way, and so I right away I said yeah, and I went out there, started to gain the weight. They were already shooting the Vietnam part, and I put on like 30 pounds or 40 pounds or something, and Stanley just thought it looked like I could kick everybody's ass, so. I just kept going up until he was satisfied, you know.
Wow.
It was still hard to keep on though, because, you know, first of all, I was young and my metabolism right. wasn't used to it at that point. And I was training. I was learning how to march and do monkey patrol with the rifles, and wow. you know, I was there every day with Lee Ermey, a whole platoon of us, like all these Brits. There wasn't one. All my whole platoon, except for the principal roles, were all Brits, all these young Brits. They were awesome. And we were like a platoon, you know, we trained all of that marching and all that stuff together.
So how many weeks before you started shooting?
Oh gosh, I had several months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, because Stanley takes a long time, you know.
I don't know if you could ever do that today, but that's amazing.
No.
Wow. Wow. Now, I know a lot of people are listening to this, Vincent, myself included. And I just want to hear a little bit of what was it like? What was he like as a director, Stanley? I mean, I'm so jealous that you worked with him. God, what was he like?
You know, I have nothing but like extremely fond memories of the guy. You know, he was so sweet to me. You know, I was so nervous. And just to meet him, you know, I wasn't really nervous about the part, but I was definitely nervous about working for him.
Right.
And, you know, he invited me out to the set the day after I arrived. And I got led by one of the PAs, who's now a first, who I've worked for here in the States.
Right.
We're walking through the Bechtem Gasworks, which is where they Anton first painted the whole place to look like the City of Way, and then they brought in a demolition team and blew it all up, brought in sand and palm trees from Spain. So I'm walking through this whole giant set outside of London, and I see Stanley sitting behind his monitor. Back then, the monitor screens were like
right.
that big, but they were that the screen was that big, but the actual monitor was like that long,
right.
you know, at the back. And you know, I'm sitting next. He stood up. He saw me coming over. He stood up and he shook my hand and he said, "How are you, Vincent? Are you doing all right?" And, you know, he's, you know, it was just, the whole thing was weird. You know, he's like a Jewish guy from the Bronx. And, you know, it was like, wow. I was like, he goes, sit down. So yeah. I sat down next to him in his chair, in one of the chairs there. And we watched him. I watched him attempt to shoot a scene. And I sat there basically all day. And he talked to me all day.
And did he allow people to improvise, in other words, you know, on dialogue? Did he allow that?
There wasn't a lot of improv.
Yeah, wasn't a lot of that. Dialogue. I don't think so.
Not dialogue, but everything else you could do. Like, you could switch up the way you were doing it. You couldn't really change the blocking too much because he was very particular about his shots, which, you know, he's Stanley Kubrick.
Right.
So you had to be careful, but you could improvise within the stage that he gave you. You're just not allowed to, no dialogue changes, which, you know, I don't mind anyway. I love to just do dialogue.
Yeah, well, you're like picture perfect when it comes to that. I mean, you're pretty good when it comes to that. Well, we get a lot of dialogue on Godfather, which is, and how's your, so obviously Private Leonard, Leonard Lawrence, actually to be exact, was your character. And I mean, that's an iconic character. People talk about that character. I mean, it's, and again, I want to get into so many great movies that you made. I mean, the thing about you is you're one Italian-American. I've always said Italian-Americans have a tendency to get pigeonholed into gangsters and things like that. But I go, well, look at Vincent D'Onofrio. You know, he doesn't. And you don't. You do everything. You play, and that's why I say you're the actor's actors, and so many actors respect you, because you go out there and you do, I mean, Men in Black, that, what was that like? What was the name of your character in Men in Black?
What was his name?
I forgot.
Yeah, me too.
You played the fly or something?
The cockroach, yeah.
The cockroach. I mean, come on, Vincent.
Yeah. It was wild because Barry Sonnenfeld, you know, was the director. And Barry, who I love this guy so much. He's a pretty amazing dude. But, you know, the way I met him was very odd because you remember Stacey Scher, who now produces like she's like a big producer. She's an amazing lady, and she had produced something else that I was in before, so she knew me. And she called me one day and she said, Barry Sonnenfeld wants me to give you a script. He wants me to hand it to you. He goes, but you have to promise you'll never talk to him about acting.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what, you know, and you know, I knew about Barry Sonnenfeld because he was a DP. And a lot of the movies that he was a director of photography on were like some of my favorite directors, like early Sam Raimi and the Coen brothers. And
yes.
So it was like, I was like, okay, look, I'll read it for sure. Like, and I promise I won't talk to him about acting. But then you have to imagine, I cracked it open and it's this bug inside of it. There's no detail. There's no like, okay, he looks like this and he does this. Right. And he does, you know, it just tracks through the whole script. And so, you know, it was a bit daunting that I was going to have to come up with this whole thing on my own. But, you know, I felt like it was like a challenge. And I also knew Rick Baker was doing the makeup. And yeah. I thought that the two of us together, because I always loved everything he
ever,
like seriously, everything he ever did.
Yes.
And I was a complete nerd for him. And it turned out perfectly. You know, Rick and I ended up spending hours and hours and days and days and days and days together while he was painting and figuring the whole thing out and sculpting. And I was working on the posture and the, right. You know, I had my knees locked off and my ankles locked off. So when I walked, I couldn't move. You know, I used basketball braces and then locked them off with duct tape. And same with my ankles. I did with sticks. I locked them off. And, I found I used George C. Scott and John Huston's voice. I combined the two voices for the guy's voice because I actually wanted him to talk like John Huston, say like pond scum and stuff like that. you know, Chaz, it's nice to meet you. You know, but it was too slow.
Right.
And so it wouldn't work. So I added, you know, George C. Scott in Dr. Strangelove, you know. Yeah. And I put those two together for his voice.
You were great in that. You know what? My producer, Michael Lavin, he has a question for you because he's such a big fan of yours. Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, my God. I love, especially in Men in Black, I love it. Do you ever think about how weird it is this summer they might announce aliens are actually real and that might not be such a science fiction movie anymore?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. What's the question?
So the question is, was there anyone on set who you were like, who is that guy? Is that guy from the government? Like, it feels like too eerily on target. I know, now. Right?
I know. It's amazing that, I mean, I've never thought of that before. I just think it's fascinating what's happening right now. Like it sort of feels like we're on the verge of learning something, but we don't know what we're going to learn. I mean, these shots from these pilots are pretty extraordinary. You know, the newest footage that the Pentagon released of these,
right.
these pilots doing training and then called over to aid a couple more jets. And they all, one guy was able to actually lock on to this thing that was moving with speeds that, you know, and you hear all the pilot. I think it's extraordinary. I can't wait to find out what it is actually.
Yeah. I really do. I mean, I want to talk to this thing. I want to go, excuse me. All right, so what's the deal? Is there like Jesus Christ? Do you know about Jesus?
Yeah.
Were you around when he was here, or were your people here?
There are questions.
There are questions. I really want to ask some questions. You know, this whole religion thing, how did that work out for you guys? Yeah. I know how it worked out for us. How did it work out for you guys?
It'd also be nice to see something different around, like, you know, to have an alien have a shop on the corner or something, you know? You know what I mean? We want to go have some alien food tonight. We're going to get alien takeout, you know?
That's right, alien takeout. I like it. Wait a minute. Hold it. There's a TV series there somewhere. Hold it. Where's my notepad? A TV series. No, I always think about that. And how are you feeling about, obviously, the second season on Godfather of Harlem? How are you feeling about that?
It's good. I don't watch the stuff that I do, so I have no idea what it looks like. But I get to watch you guys when I'm working with you guys, and I loved it. You know, I
understand that, because there's about eight movies that I did that I never saw, that I just never saw them. I don't know.
I stopped 15 years ago.
You don't watch anything you do.
Well, sometimes I have to. Like sometimes I go to the premiere, so I watch the opening when the lights go down, then I cut out, and then before the lights come up, I always sit on an aisle and I get back in before the lights.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they say Jimmy Stewart was like that. He never watched anything he's ever did.
Yeah, you know, I find it extremely boring to watch myself, you know, and I wish that there was a way to just, like, you know, watch all my peers, you know. That's the best thing about our business, is that, you know, I can see all my favorite actors and not.
Right.
Because they're all working. I don't know. I stopped watching playback, and I stopped watching movies about 15 years ago.
That's fascinating. Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to say, I'll go to the premiere and then I won't probably never watch the movie again.
Yeah.
But there are about eight movies that I did. I never saw them. And people go, how could you do that? And I go, I don't know. I just don't have any interest in.
Well, that's the thing. There's really no interest, you know. It's just like,
I don't know if they're good, bad. I just missed the premiere. And what am I going to do? Look for it now and watch myself? I don't know. I feel kind of funny. You did a movie that I loved that I didn't even know it was you. You were so young. And was Mystic Pizza.
Yeah.
And I watched that movie. And when I remember seeing it, I said, holy shit, that's Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was a terrific movie. I love that movie. I thought it was terrific. And obviously.
I love that movie, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was a terrific movie. What a feel-good movie that was.
We had a great time. You know, I'll never forget that time. There were three amazing actresses, you know,
yes.
Lily Taylor, Annabeth Gish, and Julia Roberts.
I mean, all three of them.
Amazing.
Now, did you know when you guys did that, I'll ask you two questions. Did you know that movie was going to be good, or you just didn't know? You just do it. Did you say, wow, this is a special movie?
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I didn't know enough about what made a movie good right. and bad. And I mean, do we know? You know, it's hard.
No.
It's a tough one, you know, right? So, but I was so young, you know, it was right after Full Metal Jacket. So, you know, as soon as I took the weight off, like I didn't take any jobs until I got all the weight all off.
Wow.
You know, I was offered a couple of bad guys in some big films, but they, you know, I just didn't want to do it. You know, I felt like, I would really rather just go back down to me again and then see what I can scrounge up. And so I scrounged up Mystic Pizza. But I do remember watching the girls and Adam Stork. I do remember Adam. Adam's a writer now, but he was a great actor back then. And I remember watching them thinking, okay, you know, like this is a pretty good fucking crew. Like I'm pretty happy with this crew. Like
did anybody think that Julia was going to explode like she did at the time?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like
that's really.
Chaz, there was no question. You could not be in the same room with this girl for multiple reasons and not think this girl is going to be. I mean, I know you've experienced that before with us.
Yes.
You just know. You know, you just,
wow.
They're unstoppable. Their momentum is so strong that it moves the room when they're in it. You know, it's amazing.
Wow. That's interesting. Wow. And then you come to, we come to Law and Order SUV. Now,
criminal intent.
I'm sorry. Criminal intent, right?
Yeah.
Now what, I mean, you were making movies at the time. I guess they made you an offer you couldn't refuse. And you just said,
they did, yeah. I was a bit, you know, there's a little controversy there. I was told some things that actually never happened, which is why I took it. I needed to spend more time at home.
Right.
And because I think I was, we were in our 6 year of marriage then. And I needed to spend more time at home. It was clearly I did because I was just everywhere. Because you know, back then you could do multiple movies, and you know, and a lot of them were done in America. You know, these days you have to go to, like, but I could just travel and just do them. But you know, I was told that I would be home more. You know, and the money was great. Unfortunately, I wasn't home more. I was home less, and that kind of was a bummer. Yeah, yeah. Kate Irby and I, we would average around 17 hours. A day.
17 hours a day.
That was our average, yeah. Easily 17 hours a day.
That was the average.
That I would say the average, yeah. Sometimes
I always ask this question, Vincent. Do you think does it have to be 17 hours? Does it really?
Never.
It doesn't.
No. I mean, it's nobody's fault except for the person running the show. I mean, it's not Dick's fault, it's the person on the ground running the show. There is whoever convinced them, those big guys, like those, like Dick Wolf, he's such a great guy and he's a friend to this day, whoever said, oh my God, it cost them so much money and so many people's time. No way. There was no way, especially that kind of show, which is the facts, you know, that's it. No big deal. You know, don't make a mountain out of a molehill in the way you shoot. Just shoot it, get it in, get it out. There's no reason why we'd have to work.
Yeah. Way. I mean, first of all, it's counterproductive. The crew's tired. The actors are tired. You come in the next day. I don't know. Did they try to force call you a lot or you know, cause that's another. I mean,
yeah. Sometimes we would just have to because there's just, you know, you're on Friday night and Saturday morning's coming up and you're like, oh my God, like it was crazy.
Wow. How many years you did that, Law and Order?
Nine.
9 years.
Yeah.
Wow. Nine years.
Yeah. But I have to tell you, though, I was a better actor when I left that show.
You were?
Oh, for sure.
And you think that's from just every day doing your
show? Number one, I think that I experienced three amazing writers. I got to work for three amazing writers. Rene Basse, who was the developer of it with Dick, Warren Light, who's now running Special Victims Unit,
right,
and Chris Brancato wrote the last 8 episodes.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and so when I left, my chops were good.
They were good.
I could do, like, you know, syncopated style. You know, like, I got it.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know the feeling. I know that feeling, like, when I'm doing a Broadway play or if I'm doing my one-man show a lot, that you just get off stage and you feel like you could do anything. Yeah. Like, yeah, all right, give me the script. What is it? Come on.
You know, it's amazing training because, I mean, I know you know this, but for the people that don't, like, in movies, you know, 2 or 3 scenes, you make transitions over 2 or 3 scenes. Sometimes a whole act, you takes your character to make a transition. In a TV show, in those early TV shows, you'd make 3 transitions in one scene.
Exactly.
You know, and I would have tons of dialogue. Talk about a lot of dialogue.
Oh.
I mean, my character never shut up. Never.
Yes, and a lot of your dialogue was some technical stuff because you were like this brilliant mind. And I would
Kate had the worst stuff, and I know you know this, is exposition.
Yes.
Kate was brilliant at it. Brilliant at it. I've never seen it. She was amazing.
I directed her in Oz when she was in Oz.
Right.
I directed her and I never
forgot. Scared me in that, boy. Oof.
I directed her and I went, oh, this girl is good.
Yeah, man.
Oh, this girl is real good. I mean, I remember because as a director, I consider myself a jockey and I'm just riding this great horse and I just go left, right, slower, faster, do the.
When you're directing TV, yeah.
Yeah, and anything I said to her, she was like, oh, yeah, okay, okay. I mean, I was like, okay, wow, she's good.
She was something else.
You know, she was something else.
You know, for more than half of the series, she was a single mom, too.
Really?
Man, I'll never forget one Christmas night. We were in some building down off of Astor Place. And there was a Christmas tree in the lobby. And I remember looking across the room and seeing her sleeping under the Christmas tree in the middle of the night. It was like I'll never forget it. Never forget it.
Wow. That's a memory. I mean, so, Vince, tell us about, we're winding up a little on our way, but tell us about things that you're working on. I think you wrote a book. Am I correct by saying
that? Yeah, the book is coming out. Yeah. It's called Mother Stuff and Things. It comes
Mother
out.
Mother Stuff and Things.
Yeah, Mother Stuff and Things. It comes out on the 18th of this month.
Wow.
And it's my first book. But there's 2 more in the works that we're doing. I got a children's book coming out and a book of poetry coming out. But so this is you would love this because you'll just sit there and laugh because you know me too. So it's all short stories, fake journals from the point of view of other aspects of myself and aspects that I've imagined, just characters that I've imagined writing journals and animals writing journals. It's like a book full of this kind of words.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So that's coming out May 18th.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's just, the people out there, pick up this book, Mother
Stuff. And then, you know, where, you know, I'm waiting to decide what I'm going to do next. You know, there's a couple of things, but right now I have to take a break for a while and I'm going to go to Australia actually, in a few weeks, the end of June and do a show. Did you ever see that, Sweet Country? It's made by Hardwick in Australia, this guy.
No, I haven't.
It's indigenous. It's an indigenous writer and the cast, and it's called Sweet Country something. I forgot the last title, but it's a brilliant. It won at Cannes Fest, at the Cannes Film Festival. And so they're doing a television show about a woman indigenous Australian woman who lives outside of Alice Springs, who's a detective. And the whole cast is from that area, and it's cast with the most amazing of actors, Australian actors. And I'm going to go there and play the father it's only 4 episodes long, the series. It's a short series. And I'm going to go out there and play the father of a girl who has died. I'm going to play a guy from Texas who lives in the outback and has a mixed race daughter.
That's just amazing. I mean, you jump into different characters like nobody I ever seen. And plus you're an Italian American. I'm very proud of that.
Me too, by the way.
I'm very proud that you're an Italian American. And before we close, are any other films you got being released now? Anything coming up that I should know?
The Eyes of Tammy Faye with Andrew Garfield and Jessica Chastain. They play the Bakers.
Wow. Jessica's the real deal, man.
Oh, my God.
She's the real deal. Yeah.
She knows I just love her so much. I mean,
yeah, I worked with her in a film, one of her first films, Jolene. She was like you said about Julia Roberts. I felt that about her. I said, this girl is forget it.
So you did Jolene?
Yes, I did Jolene, yes. I did Jolene with Jessica Chastain, and she was unknown at the time. I know she worked with Al and Solomon. But I worked with her and I said, this girl is something else. She was great. And obviously, you know, there she goes. She's off to the races.
Yeah. So, she's amazing. I mean, we just had a blast. She's just, you know,
a great person.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. The fact that that there's these incredible actresses getting these amazing opportunities.
Yes.
That they should have always gotten. Yes. I mean, you know, you can't, like, when she's playing Tammy Faye, you can't take your eyes off her. I mean, it's like it's unbelievable.
Yes.
And yeah, same with Andrew. Andrew's very, very good in the movie. So yeah, so I play Falwell, Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell.
Reverend Jerry Falwell. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio, like I said before, and I'll say it again, the actor's actor. He absorbs himself into these roles. It's amazing. Vincent, it was really great talking to you. I just want to say, for the record, I had a blast with you working on Godfather of Harlem. Maybe we didn't talk enough about that, but we should. It's a great show, and I want to tell people to watch it. The first year was great. The second year is even better.
Yes, yeah.
It's really an amazing
Let me say one thing before we leave, that I had the pleasure sometimes we would sneak away and you would direct me, and it was the most amazing thing. And I'll never forget your generosity, my friend. Never.
Well, you're very welcome.
You remember those couple. I know you remember exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, when you're on Secretariat like you are, it's very easy to ride a horse like that. But God bless you, brother. God bless you and your family. Stay safe.
Thanks,
and who knows? We'll see you back on the set next year.
Yeah, for sure.
God bless.